Welcome to ITE 1, Module 2, for Class 2 of 2011, Semester 1. Today we'll be talking about safety and tool use. Yes, this stuff seems kind of boring, but it's very important. We want to be safe, and so we go over it, and some of it actually is interesting. So, and as we were just talking about, if you've taken your exam and turned in your worksheets and stuff, you guys pat yourselves on the back because you've completed probably the hardest part chapter in the whole thing. This chapter is a lot shorter. I think it's only got three major sections or four major sections, and that one had eight. Most of this is common sense stuff, but we must go over it anyway. We're going to talk about safety procedures are designed to guard three things from damage. Could somebody name one that they might think that safety would guard against? What are some of the things safety is protecting here?
Me.
Absolutely.
It's you, the environment.
Yep, there's one more.
Let's check the computer and all of its components.
Yep, so you're right. So we're protecting the equipment, the environment, and us, people. Remember that you are no longer doing work for just yourself. If you are... do damage to someone else's property or data, or your organization violates environmental code, you can face legal action. So if you're working for someone else, it's, you know, what you do affects them. There are two parts of the computer that you should not try to repair because they contain extremely high voltages. And we've talked about these a little bit before, but they are the power supply and the monitor. Technicians must be specially trained to do these types of repairs.
Sorry, Sean. I would also include printers for that as well.
Yes, printers not as much so because, the two worst ones are the power supply and the monitor, especially CRT. Printers can have high voltages, not as much with inkjets, but they also have that in here too. But the power supply and monitor are the big no-nos, so that's why they've got them here. But you are correct. Printers do have problems as well.
Why don't they have UPSs?
They do.
Don't work with
those
it.
Either.
Because if you take the batteries out of a UPS, you can work with them. And in fact, I've done it quite a number of times. The trick is to pull the batteries out first and then work with it. If you don't, that can be very unpleasant. But I wouldn't say UPSs are a no-no, provided you pull the batteries out.
Good.
So because these take special training to repair, it's much easier and usually cheaper to just replace these components, this being the monitor or the power supply inside the computer. These two components are the exception to the always rule of always wearing an anti-static wrist strap, because you do not want the high voltages going through you. So the only things we don't do is wear the anti-static wrist strap we don't wear them for the monitor or the power supply, because that just doesn't even sound like a good idea, especially on the power supply part. As Dana pointed out, printers can also be dangerous to repair. They contain high voltage wires and parts that can stay very hot long after being turned off. So you've got high voltage and things can be hot, so be careful. If you are doing anything more than replacing the ink toner or paper, be very careful. A safe workspace helps to prevent many accidents if it is clean, organized, and well lighted. And that's important if you're having somebody work with you. So don't just go scoff at the well lighted part. Go ahead. All right, if you had something, let me know. I'll keep going. Here are some basic common sense safety practices when working with computers. Remove your watch or any other jewelry, and secure loose clothing. Turn off the power and unplug equipment before performing service. Sorry, I had a cough come through.
I'll stop whining. Please, when you get the next desktop, unplug it, okay?
Yeah.
Could I add to what you were saying, Sean?
On both ends. Yeah, what's up?
About watches and loose clothing and stuff. Also, I guess particularly for girls, tie up your hair is something to consider as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You don't want to get your hair caught in the fans. That'd be not so.
Or just anywhere. If you're working
Grace's
on a laptop,
hair, it's like this light frizzy stuff, and it would really get caught in everything if she didn't sort of, you know, shove it all back.
Which I'm sure she does, right?
I can
right?
only imagine.
But see the just see the bright side of it. She doesn't need a haircut.
Oh,
that's right.
Don't need my scalp either, apparently.
Yeah, that would.
I know somebody
who
once got their hair cut in the spinny ball of an IBM Selectric.
Oh, wow. Okay, if you are working on a laptop, remove the battery as well if you can. Not all of them let you. Thank you, Mac. Cover any sharp edges inside the computer case with tape. I'm not sure how many people actually do that, but it is a good idea. Never open a power supply or monitor, as we just talked about. We don't repair them. Do not touch areas in printers that are hot or that use high voltage. Consult the manual to learn where such components are located and procedures to avoid this high voltage. So
I have
find
a comment
out
about
printer
this.
Manufacturer wants you to do. Yeah.
Okay, in the test, there is a language problem. They say which components should you not use or should you not touch, and it looks like you would want to choose two, but it's radio buttons. You only want to choose one, so be aware of that because they do have some language issues, as one of the students found out, and I went in and looked at it, and sure enough,
it is component. Yeah, so be careful. Radio buttons, remember, from your basic Windows use, you can only check one at a time. So, if there's any doubt as to whether a question is choose one, if there's radio buttons, then guess what? You can only actually choose one anyway.
And while we've said this
how
before,
the form's designed.
If it says choose two and you pick three, you get no marks, okay?
Yes, you get a zero, a lovely zero. So, we don't want that. Okay. Have a fire extinguisher and first aid kit nearby, and make sure you know where they are. As blind people, it's not good enough to know these things are nearby. Make sure someone shows you how to get at them, if at all possible. Make sure... You can also make up your own first aid kit and take it with you so that you are familiar with it. That's probably a really good idea. In fact, I saw something on my wall at work that I'd been running into over and over and over again, and I said, Josh, what is this? He said, oh, it's the first aid kit. I was like, really? I would have never known that. I should actually take a look at what all's in it. It's in our break room. Like, really? That's what
this
is?
I think the other important thing, Sean, is that, you know, it's well and good having a fire extinguisher, but you need to know how to use it as well.
Yep, and we cover that later on in just a minute. When repairing components, always be prepared for a possible fire. Here we go. Know what to do in case of fire, or knowing what to do in case of fire can save property and lives. When components short out or overheat, you will smell a burning odor. I'm sure most of us know exactly what burning plastic smells like. Yeah, I think I do. Here are procedures to follow in case of fire. Never fight a fire that is out of control or not contained. Always have a planned fire escape route before beginning any work. That's one as a blind person you don't want to skip either, although hopefully if you really have to get out you can find someone, hopefully. Get out of the building quickly. Contact emergency services for help. Be sure to locate and read the instructions on the fire extinguisher in your workplace before you have to use it. Before you have to use them. Because when you're panicked, you're going to have trouble following those directions. Safety training may be available in your organization. In the United States, there are 4 classifications of fire extinguishers. A different letter, color, and shape identifies each fire extinguisher classification. Each type of fire extinguisher has specific chemicals to fight different types of fires. Here they are. Class A, paper, wood, plastics, and cardboard. Class B, gasoline, kerosene, and organic solvents. Class C, electrical equipment. And Class D is combustible metals. And you'll need to know what types of fire extinguisher classifications are there in your country if they're different from yours. So that's something you'll need to know as a technician if you're not in America or, you know, you just need other information. It is important to know how to use a fire extinguisher. Use the memory aid pass, PASS, to help you remember the basic rules of fire extinguisher operation. P, pull the pin. A, aim at the base of the fire, not at the flames. S, squeeze the lever. And S, sweep the nozzle from side to side. We may not be using the fire extinguishers as blind people, but we may need to instruct others on how to do this. So it's important. You think, oh, I'm not going to be the one fighting the fire. And yeah, you probably won't be, but if someone says, how do I do this? Help! You might want to be able to tell them.
Just a point, right, does anybody know why we don't put water on electrical fires?
Because it makes it worse, I guess. I was
actually asking the other students, but yes, you have answered the question. Water contains impurities that conduct electricity, and especially if power is still onto the thing that's on fire, pouring water on can just make things a whole lot worse.
Because we generally don't put water and electricity together anyway, so when there's a fire, it seems like a very bad idea to try this. Okay, going back to some common sense.
But it's very easy to do, though, just as a point. I had this once with an oil fire. On a stove, so slightly off topic, but yeah, because you see fire and your first thought is, oh, put water on it, throw it in the sink, whatever. And I literally had to stop and consciously think, no, I do not want to do that. And I've got a very nice video as to why you don't want to do that. If anyone wants it, email me off list or whatever.
That's why you always keep a box of baking soda above the stove.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank
okay.
you, rehab teacher.
That's nice. Good, because I would be the person.
No,
to
it
get.
Is good.
All right. More common sense things. Keep food and drinks out of your workspace. That just seems like a common sense thing, and yet most of us tend to have these kind of things a little too close to our computers, but you're really not supposed to.
Yeah,
keep
technically
your
there's no food
clean.
In the training room, except
no,
some
there's
of the
no food
in
the training room.
Coffee,
there's
so.
No.
Yeah.
Especially if they're not your computer, it's a really exceedingly bad idea to do this. If it's your computer,
it's your deal. Anyone done this? Anyone want to own up to emptying drinks into their computer? I have.
Yep, a cat jumped onto something and dumped a can of Sprite into.
I haven't done it with the actual computer, but I have dipped a can of drink over a keyboard.
Oh no.
Yeah, I spilled a beer into mine. Rubbing alcohol into a computer.
Oh no!
I've seen soda and water in two separate computers. I've seen soda and water dumped in them, and one of them was—I think they were both laptops too.
I have a friend who poured an entire can of mug root beer into a scanner, and that scanner still works, to my knowledge.
Wow!
I actually saw somebody. Oh, I actually know of somebody who emptied a cup of coffee into the switchboard by accident. That was unpleasant.
Oh no!
A friend.
I poured a can of bourbon into a powerboard once.
A friend of mine found cookies in the CD-ROM drive.
Oh, Chuck!
What kind?
Little snack?
I don't remember.
It doesn't matter at that point. They were probably really nasty and...
so
moldy. Yeah, no, there's actually been some scary stories about computers that have come into the shop. I remember one that the CPU fan wouldn't stop turning and it kept overheating. It was clogged up with roach bodies.
Oh my god.
Ew.
I had, I was told a story about somebody who worked in a braille display shop, and they kept getting this woman's braille display in, and they would open it, and there would be all of these roaches inside the braille display, and they kept getting infested with roaches every time this woman sent in her braille display, so they're like, no, we're not going to fix it anymore.
We actually get roaches in Australia just because there's lots of them, and like every house has them, and one of the problems I found with my MacBook Pro 15 was because the base of it got nice and warm, all the little roaches used to climb in through the Kensington lock slots and in through the CD-ROM drawer and stuff. So I had a biologically active Mac, and we used to have to pop the panels off and evict the little critters. So you got to watch out for that.
Wow. Okay. Moving on. Keep your workspace clean and free of clutter. That's a tough one for a lot of us, but if it's someone else's workspace, if you're in an organization, you definitely want to be neat. Bend your knees when lifting heavy objects to avoid injury to your back. So, you know, bend the knees and lift using the strength in your legs. Never use an AC adapter to charge a device it is not meant to charge. And the why? The reason is that different devices have different voltage requirements, and charging them with the wrong adapter can damage both the charger and the device, and this can actually be a fire hazard in some instances. If the devices belong to you, label them in some way, either Braille on the cord or adapter, or if you have something like a pen friend, use it. But make sure that you do it. Print on the adapters rarely tells you what the adapter is actually for. With laptops, it's a little better because they'll actually say HP blah blah blah, but maybe not. You don't know. So get some labeling. When you actually know what it is, label it. Okay, Grace's story time. Sorry.
Okay, so little 8-year-old Grace had a handy cassette recorder and a Braille light. And I realized that the handy cassette recorder, you know, the plug, because my handy cassette had died, the plug for my Braille light would fit into the handy cassette recorder. And I didn't have that handy cassette recorder plug with me, so I just plugged it in. And oh my gosh, you should have smelled the smoke that came out of that battery, and the battery was actually charred.
Oh yeah, I've done that.
Wow.
Another neat trick with cables, if they're not, they haven't got a big adapter on them, is stick them in a roll, like a Glad wrap roll or a toilet roll, and label the roll so that they're neat and you know what they are.
Oh, okay.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I guess that'd go. Mm.
Also, all you people with iPhones, go and buy Digitize and start printing barcode labels. No, you don't have to. But, like, seriously, that's another good way of doing it. If you're going to pay lots for that iPod Touch or that iPhone and you've got QR codes, print some labels on address labels and stick them on things, and that way you can print lots and lots and lots of labels, and the blindness agency doesn't have you over a barrel with the cost of Dymo tape.
Well, one of the things you can do if you have Dymo tape, and I've seen somebody do this, is he put like a short label of what the charger was around the cord and stuck it to itself, and that actually stayed on fairly well. So that's a way, if you do prefer Dymo tape, if that's all you have. So yes, be careful with chargers, because you can, but just about every manual will tell you to don't use the wrong charger, and if you do, they can say, oh no, we had that in the manual, you didn't read it. So just always use the charger that comes with the thing that it's supposed to go with.
If you have the Builder Disaster Charger that you got from the electronics store, they're the multi-voltage ones with the reversible tips and everything that will charge 301 squillion different devices around your home, if you get it right. Once you do get it right, try and get somebody to put some heat shrink or whatever over the outside of the connector so that somebody doesn't pull the little plug off and reverse the polarity on you, because that will make things go bang. And sometimes kids and people who just aren't careful just pull it off. They'll go, oh, I've pulled the end off the cable, I'll just put it back on, and they pay no attention to the orientation, and well, it should have been positive tip, but it so wasn't. So yeah, that's just one thing to watch out for. And heat shrink works better than sticky tape, although if you're in a jam, insulation tape works well too.
I'm trying to think what heat shrink is.
It's this piping stuff that you put over things, and then you heat it up with like one of those little gas torches or whatever, and it shrinks and it seals down over the outside of it. It's pretty cool stuff.
Oh, okay.
Wow, that's
awesome.
There's
a different name for it, or I just never heard of it.
Electronic shops like Fry's and stuff will have it. It's called heat shrink piping, and you just put it over the cable, and you get like one of those little butane torches that you run off, like obviously butane, and you just heat the heat shrink up, and it shrinks. Probably best to get a sighted person to do it, but I know blind people have done it.
Yeah, you be careful. Make sure you are very careful.
An electric heat gun for doing those, because it that stuff works brilliantly, and while a lighter will work, I actually found it more efficient with one of those electric heat guns that are used for melting glue and things.
Fair enough.
A hot air gun also works. I've done that.
Okay, ESD stands for electrical static discharge or electrostatic discharge. This is when static electricity builds up on a surface, then jumps to a computer component. Humans are aware of ESD when it reaches about 3,000 volts. If ESD makes a noise or you receive a shock, the discharge was probably over 10,000 volts. It only takes less than 30 volts to harm computer components. Originally the text said 30, now I seem to see it in the update saying less than 30. around 30 volts. So that's the number you want to have. That number is in your test, I think. But have that number around. Here are precautions to prevent ESD damage to components. Computer components usually come in anti-static bags. These are plastic and feel extremely smooth. They're kind of cool. But keep all components in their anti-static bags until you install them. You should also store components in anti-static bags when not in use. Use grounded mats on workbenches. Use grounded floor mats in work areas if you have them. Use anti-static wrist straps when working on computers. Moving on to electromagnetic interference, or EMI.
How about evict the cat?
Yeah?
I was just saying,
yeah, actually, that's
cat.
A good idea, too.
The cat is not meant to be in your repair area. And as you know, sometimes cats and dogs get quite staticky, and you should probably evict the cat before you work on your computer.
Yeah, that's the thing. You want to get animals and small children and other things that might be want to play with things out of your repair area, too.
And trying to avoid carpet.
Yeah, avoid carpet as well. Should we continue on, or should we're actually about time? Oh, goodness, I'm not going to answer that one.
Actually, no. Hair isn't that static-ridden unless it's a really dry day, and usually women should have their hair retained. And even guys with long hair, let's not be gender-specific here. If you're a bloke and you've got really long hair, you probably want it tied back and out of the way as well. And you also don't want to be in your... I don't know what you guys call them. Tracky dacks? What do you guys call track suits? Sweatpants and sweatshirt. No, we can't, Grace. You'll just use
sweatpants. No sweatpants. And no silky, soft,
no
spandexy clothes.
We used to love zapping the dog because it used to wander near to the TV and it would zap its tail. It didn't hurt the dog, but it sort of made it look very surprised. Oh. You don't want that happening to your components.
No, you certainly don't. All right, it is about 10 o'clock, so are we going to...
We're done,
are we going to break off? All right.
Probably. Your tasks for this week, I should tell you. You're going to work on the module test. Everybody, please have your first go at the module test done. If you feel like you want to go ahead and do 2.3.4, that is optional. To get ahead, you can definitely do that. It's a very easy hard drive utilities lab. So if you guys can do that, that'd be good. If not, that's okay. You'll just have to do it next week with your assembly disassembly. So I might do that this week if I were you guys. But the only thing that must be done is your module 1 test.
This will be emailed to Cavi Discuss after lecture. If you did not catch the previous dissertation, please read Cavi Announce. Thank you.
Yep.
Also, read chapter 2 if you haven't already.
Yep.
I have a quick question on the once we take the tests. Do we need to send in, like, once we click the grade exam button, then what do we need to do from there?
Nothing. You can close the window. Or, if you feel like you want to send me your grade because you want me to know or Sean to know, you can send that to Cavi instructors, but that is not a requirement.
To be honest, the other person who does the instructing has insisted that everybody send the things in because they do not feel comfortable looking at the grade book. We have no such limitation, and we are quite happy to look at your grade book. However, we will keep those results confidential, we promise.
Do we want people to actually copy and paste the page, or do we just... Because
I don't care.
So, hi, Grace, I got a 96, is what I used
to do. That's up to you all. If you want to send me a result because you want me to know, if you don't send me a result, I'm not going to... I'll probably look in the gradebook at the end of the week to make sure you all have done your tests, because that will go towards your module mark. But... that is just something that has started new now, so I actually will look at your gradebook and see your exam.
One small point, do not flunk the exam, take the exam, flunk the exam, take the exam, flunk the exam. Call us. We can help. Okay? So if you get 31% and you feel like throwing yourself in a hole because you got 31%, well, once you've recovered from that and had a cup of Earl Grey or whatever your beverage of choice is, please call
deadline
some people up.
Jack and Coke.
Okay, Drew, drag 2 Jack and Cokes for you, Drew. Then call us up and we will help you.
Well, that's what I do if I, failed the test that badly. You don't
want
to close
it entirely.
Deadline to
complete module 1 or...? or the whole lot?
A deadline to complete module one, at least the first go of this module one test. Please have it done by next week when you come to class.
At the end of the test, there's usually the personalized feedback, and if you go through that whole thing, what it will basically do is give you section, based on your wrong answers, it will tell you, it won't tell you what you got wrong, but it will tell you sections of the curriculum that deal with the answers you got wrong. So you can read those parts and tell you which parts you can read that will help you on your next exam try.
I love that personalized feedback thing too.
I always look at that, but then I just called Grace and said, let's go over the exam.
I find that that
so
personalized feedback is...
So what are we doing tomorrow
night? We are doing... We can work on 2.3.4 if anyone wants to work on 2.3.4. Otherwise, we can talk about assembly, disassembly, and get ready to do that.
Or we can play top speed.
Or we can play top speed.
Top speed sounds good to me.
What if you have no computer to assemble or disassemble?
Then you are going to go and listen to some lovely recordings of me and Carrie or Geraldine and Carrie and people taking apart computers.
Buy lots of coffee and I'll bring one.
Okay.
You're on.
You need to help me
with
that
other
thing,
since
too.
That would work since you guys are...
Okay, if you guys actually keep the language down and somebody has a recorder, feel free to record it. Because we'd be more than happy to have an American, Canadian, shoot me, take on this, if you guys want to. Thank you.
And that actually would be really cool.
Task analysis on the learning process.
Woohoo!
I'm not
actually,
sure
if I had a spare thing, I might do my own thing, but I don't really, I just can't be bothered.
Sweet. Absolutely. There are two of my Canadian friends who I have not received their Module 1 labs for. I will not name names, but you might want to turn those in.
But one of your American friends is really struggling.
We know, but
well,
you're not in our class.
I'm curious because there was no sort of acknowledgement. I don't care. Did it come?
No. No, I haven't seen anything from you.
Guys, you know that request return receipt? If you have a mail client that can do it, use it. Because we will actually honor those return receipts, but no, we haven't seen anything from you, Brian. So yeah, return receipts.
Happy Dash instructors at GOTS.net.
Now, I probably I'm gonna resend because I sent Carrie 4 and you 2.
None of them have shown up. They have been
gone. Guess what's happening today, guys?
To Carrie at.
GOTSS. GOTSS. I bet you put two T's.
I think I did, and it didn't come back with a delivery failure because it's probably a valid domain. So somebody got a whole whack of mail that they have no idea what they're on about.
I bet someone from that URL has gotten a whole bunch of crap over the years for Kavi.
Well,
and I'm like,
today,
what is this for?
Today, I am fixing kavi-instructors@qcat.org. We're going to fix that alias today. And that way, if you can't spell GOTS, you might be able to spell QCAT. So that will be my thing after lunch today. We will have kavi-instructors@qcat.org. Both will work. Both will continue to work. But keep in mind that the new address will be phased in, and we will keep the old one address around for a long time yet.
That's a good thing about aliases. Golf, Oscar,
you should grab QCAT,
Sierra, Sierra.net.
That's right.
It's got two S's.
Labs to...
It's got two S's. And kavi-instructors is the place that labs go, especially for ITE1, since there are two instructors. And they might different people alternate on grading your labs. So for the Module 1 stuff, I would have been able to grade it just fine, because it's me who's grading them. But... yeah.
But I'm going to be grading... Am I going to be grading Module 2?
Your Module 2, yep.
That way we can... Yeah, okay, cool.
Module 2 will probably be a collaborative effort, because we'll grade Module 2 and 3's assembly, disassembly together, so...
Yeah, that's
for anybody,
a good idea.
For anybody who, as I said, you can use that return receipt thing, we will actually acknowledge them. And for anybody who can't remember the email address, it's listed on the student resources page down the bottom. You will need to de-spamify it, but the address is there. Feel free to cut and paste bits of it, because that's probably the easiest way to find it.
I don't know if the Mac client supports a return receipt, but I'd forgotten all about this.
It should.
Yes, it does.
It should. I don't know where it would be, but we can... If you really
no,
want
I've
to
seen Mac people
it,
do it.
And then let me know.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take a peek. That would be a good idea.
Anyone know off the top of their head whether
you must use Eudora and
Thunderbird?
What about Thunderbird?
Yeah, Thunderbird does it.
Oh yeah.
The return receipt thingy.
Yep, it does. It's in. Hold on. It's under tools, I think.
Yeah, I think it is. It's like tools request return receipt. It's a menu under there somewhere. Yeah. It's actually off the menu.
Oh, cool. That makes it easy.
This is for Thunderbird. Yeah.
That's cool.
And I agree with Dana. We should have a discussion about which tools you can use as a tech and which ones are accessible and stuff. So we might have a discussion on that. Maybe we could talk about that tomorrow. I think that's an excellent idea. Mm.
Yeah, that's probably.
I'll pretend it was mine, even though it was Dana's.
Quite useful.
Yeah, that would be a lot of
the hard drive utility lab.
Okay, all you're gonna do is this is easy. What you do is you name two manufacturers that have a hard drive, or that make hard drives, and then you're basically going to go look up information on a hard drive utility that comes, like Western Digital has one, and Seagate has one. Seagate has one. You just go look up and fill in the table about the information they ask you for it. It's 20 minutes of your life.
Okay, because I use drive fitness tests, and there's a professional microscope.
You can do that. You can report on that one as well. That's
Isn't
fine.
Isn't drive fitness test the Hitachi one?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well then put Hitachi down as one of your manufacturers, and seriously,
and
just
talk about
do
it
a
since
little
you use it.
Do fill in the table for that one. That's no problem.
Then find one other one, and you can actually...
You only have to find one.
Oh, okay. I thought you had to find two.
I thought there was two.
No, there's two. You have to name two manufacturers of hard drives, but only one utility.
Oh, I think I remember doing one. Maybe, unless it was different, I think I did one for each manufacturer.
You can if you
unless
want.
Unless I was just being overachieving.
I think you were being over, and I probably said something to you. I'm like, you probably only needed one.
Also, SpinRite does count if you want to put that in if you're a SpinRite user.
I actually use a nice little program too. It's called Microscope. It's a whole professional thing that does hard drive tests, RAM tests, and a whole bunch of other good stuff. But it's not hard drive specific or manufacturer specific.
Is it freeware?
No.
It's about $500.
Probably very much.
Oh my god.
I used it back in like 1993. It's probably changed a lot since then, but yeah, it was good back then.
Oh, one other thing I'm supposed to mention to you guys. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, my brother and I had a business set up together, and so we bought it under the business, and it really does work quite well.
How accessible is it?
It's not. You have to have somebody sighted with you.
Okay.
Okay, what I wanted to tell you guys is there's a video contest on sharing your Cisco story. And if you do this, you can win money. Like, just $500, there you go, or whatever. So if people are interested in doing that, that is up there, and there's information about it on your student homepage. So if you need money and feel like you want to record a video, that is an option for you.
And you'd be plugging Kavi, too.
Yeah, we'd like that. If you could mention that you're with the Cisco Academy for the Vision Impaired, we'd be really happy about
that.
We
basically have to talk about your Academy story.
Are you talking about, like, making a Lonely Girl 21 kind of video where you, like, splice in random clips from other things and do a whole, like...
No.
Not unless she's taking apart a computer.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money.
I thought about when I saw that.
Yeah, if you can get somebody to, like, do a YouTube video of you and it's, like, really cool and... Yeah, look, you could win lots of money, and think of what you could do with $500. So it might be worth, you know, doing something like that. I don't know. It's up to you guys, but that's the competition that's up there.
You could.
I could go to my awesome Italian restaurant 50 times.
Wow.
No, we don't expect you to donate your winnings to Cavi, but obviously if you did, we'd be very happy, but we don't expect you to. But we would expect you to at least mention our academy and stuff in your video if you could somehow, so that we get a little bit of, you know, throwback from it.
At least they'll know
Cavi,
we're still alive.
Yeah, pretty much.
One quick thing, by the way, I just want to, for anyone who wants to get who feels like being brave and wants to try taking apart computers and stuff, I just want to reiterate the importance of not ignoring warnings about electrostatic discharge, because it takes probably about 10 times, a tenth of the electricity. It takes about a tenth of the amount of static electricity that you will feel on your body to short out a computer component.
Yep.
So don't.
It's all good, Drew.
Like,
we've
work
covered this.
We've covered it. Yeah, we did.
Don't work
we
on
did
the carpet.
Okay. Is there anything else we need to talk about, or we hit the shiny stop button?
I think we hit the stop button.
I think we've just about killed it.
Yeah.